The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Kathleen Rooney. She joins us on the telephone in Chicago. Welcome back, Kathleen.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
You have a new novel out. It's called Man Overboard! And this is really an astonishing book. How on earth did you ever get the idea for this?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, kind of a lifelong interest of mine in stories of survival. And so, you know, in this book, just briefly, we've got this guy, Kit Kilpatrick, who's 33. He's from Omaha, Nebraska. He's on a Thanksgiving cruise with his extended family, and he has fallen or jumped into the Gulf of Mexico. And so the whole book is him trying to kind of figure out what happened and how he ended up there and if he's going to get rescued or not. And so I think, you know, a characteristic I give to Kick in the book is that his grandparents are Reader's Digest diehards. And if, you know, there's fellow Reader's Digest people out there, there was always those drama in real life kind of survival stories. And I think I kind of picked up a taste for people in extreme situations having to figure out how to survive from that. And so, yeah, I think it goes way back. And I love stories of people who have to do stuff that requires a great deal of courage or endurance to see if they're going to make it.
All right. So it opens and Kick is already in the water. He doesn't know how he got there. He's trying to remember how he got in the water. He'd been drinking on this cruise ship. He'd just been in a contest to see who could play the best air guitar. And now suddenly he's in the drink, and this massive cruise ship is on its way across the Gulf of Mexico from New Orleans to Cozumel. And his whole family, practically, almost his whole family is on this cruise. And I'm wondering, Kathleen, have you ever been on one of these cruises? I can't picture you being on one for some reason. Did you have to do some research? Have you ever been on one?
Yeah, you're correct. I have never been on one. It is not my idea of a good time. Another big influence on this book was my personal fear of the ocean. I, you know, grew up here mostly in Chicagoland, and before that, you know, West Virginia, Shreveport, Louisiana, all, you know, famously landlocked places, not on any sea. And the first time I saw the ocean, I was 19. I was with my friend Clark. We were on this really fun spring break trip to Costa Rica, and I had the first panic attack of my life just, you know, trying to go snorkeling in the ocean. And so I, you know, kind of hang on to that experience as this sort of landmark of how I really respect the ocean. I don't hate it, but I just am terrified of it. I think it's the definition of the sublime, something that is beautiful because it's terrible. And so I did a ton of research because I mean, never say never, but it would take a lot to get me on an actual cruise ship. But thankfully, books, the internet, TV shows, there's a lot of information out there. So I didn't have to go on a cruise.
So a lot of Love Boat reruns for your research.
I do enjoy Love Boat, yes.
Kathleen Rooney. Quality. Kathleen Rooney joins us. And Man Overboard, Kick, he's a fantastic swimmer, but he, like you, he's not a big fan of the ocean. And now suddenly he's in the ocean. And this kind of, when I started reading it, I was like, oh, man, it was making me really nervous. And because I'm a person, on the few occasions when I've been out in the middle of the ocean swimming, I've been terrified. I'm not a good swimmer. I felt really uncomfortable. And he's out there, and the entire time, 99% of the book, this guy is treading water while he's going over his entire life. and encountering various marine creatures with whom he's either hallucinating or he's having conversations with them. And this is just amazing.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things in my research that I did kind of want to get right is what would be possible. So the book is structured to be almost thriller-like, where every chapter is equivalent to 1 hour that Kik is spending in the water. And I wanted him to be kind of an exceptionally suited person for this situation. Aside from his fear, right, he's a swimmer, he's great, but he needs 4 walls and a bottom, as he puts it. He really hates the sheer vastness of the sea. But aside from that, he's really like the physical specimen who's going to be best suited to the endurance aspect. And so I did a ton of research to kind of see what would happen to you physically just being in salt water, the hypothermia, the dehydration, and of course the mental state. And, you know, reading about people who are endurance swimmers or people who have miraculously undergone this kind of experience and lived to tell about it, it seems like aside from the physical misery, your mind really does go to a lot of places that it wouldn't go normally. And so, yeah, I had fun thinking of, and I want it to be up to the audience, like if they think these sea creatures are really communing with Kik or if it's his mind drifting. I kind of inclined to think it's real, but that's just because I really love sentient beings that are not human. But he has a chance to kind of work out some stuff and look at some stuff in his past and in his emotional life that he's been avoiding when he's been safely on land.
You're listening to the Book Nook on 91.3 WYSO, fact-based journalism in service of democracy. I've been joined by Kathleen Rudy on the phone in Chicago, and her new novel is Man Overboard. And the big theme in my mind of this story is separation, loss, depression, lifelong depression. This poor guy, he's really grieving the loss of his mother. This is the big yes. theme in my mind.
That's exactly right. And I wanted this thing that he's been, you know, avoiding on land to become clear in the sea. And pretty quickly, as soon as he's out there, he realizes that he has all this unresolved grief and all these kind of loose ends related to his mom's leaving the family when he was just 11. And I think that's kind of the, in addition to a survival story, it's a family drama story. And you've got this situation that I think happens in families a lot where different people react to the same event in very different ways. And so you've got his dad, who's kind of a pretty classically emotionally constipated, distant dad. And then you've got his older sister, Kelly, who's his best friend in the world. And they love each other very much. But his dad and Kelly have kind of successfully dealt with a lot of this, I guess, for lack of a better word, trauma. And Kik just feels like he hasn't, you know, because his reaction's different, hasn't been able to work it out, and he doesn't really have anybody to confide in. And I think that's how he ends up talking to, you know, a dolphin in the ocean.
Oh, you put that very well. Emotional constipation. This is something that afflicts many men all the way up to the highest levels of government.
Yeah, I know. Go figure.
Oh, gee. Well, it's just a fascinating story, Kathleen. And you would think that the story, an hour-by-hour story of this guy from the middle of the night all the way into the next day, treading water in the Gulf of Mexico, and all the strength and endurance that this takes, you would think that it wouldn't be funny. But you are so humorous in this. I love your sense of humor. It really makes it much more palatable.
Thank you. Yes, I love being funny, and I love comedies. And for me, I think there is kind of a stereotype that tragedy is a greater or more noble art than comedy. And I really don't think that's the case. I think for me, I like things that use humor to add emotional depth. And I think this story has a lot of real emotion to it and real sadness, the grief. But to me, life is more beautiful because it is funny. It is absurd. And I really wanted to have this character who, you know, wasn't as heavy as a lot of what he's going through is, wasn't maudlin and wasn't, you know, God forbid, boring. And I think that's part of why I chose to give Kick this kind of side hustle, this aspiration of being a clown. He's getting into clowning, like the classic kind of dramatic art. And I think that there's something to that. Like, I know it's very fashionable to dislike clowns or think they're scary or only think of Stephen King's It, which of course, love that book. But I think when you really look at what clowns do, it's a bit of what I'm trying to do with the humor. They sort of show, you know, vulnerability. Clowns are always getting hit or getting hurt, but they keep bouncing back. They keep getting back up. And so I think there's something about humor that really goes well with this idea of what it takes to survive.
Now, the clown thing, that's another one where you've got people that think that clowns are really funny, and then you've got people that think that they're really scary. At one point,
yeah.
At one point, he's actually thinking about the band Insane Clown Posse. I knew a guy who was a professional clown, and
wow,
he mostly just entertained kids at parties. That was his main thing. He's a great juggler. He's a great clown. But this is about the angriest person you'd ever want to meet. And so this is my stereotype of a clown, is someone hiding behind the makeup who really isn't a very happy person.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, you have these moments in the book where Kick fully acknowledges that why he's leaning into this humorous pursuit is because of his, you know, unresolved sadness. And he even thinks of, you know, how his mom, before she left, used to play the Oldie Station and the Smokey Robinson, you know, Tears of a Clown song would come on. And of course, that references Pagliacci, which is, you know, the famous stereotype of the clown who's secretly suicidally depressed. So I definitely think that laughter and tears are, though they seem opposites, pretty closely connected in our internal wiring.
Kathleen, my favorite parts of the book are when he encounters these various marine creatures and has conversations with them. This is where we as readers and your protagonist finally begin to figure things out because of the wisdom of these creatures.
Yes. And I think that, you know, there's this joke early on with the first creature that Kick encounters, who's a whale shark. And she kind of quips, wow, men really will do anything to avoid going to therapy. And I think that's, you know, hopefully, you know, hashtag not all men, but I think it's applicable. But beyond that, I think one of the reasons it was so fun to have the sea creatures is there is this idea broadly, you know, to the point of almost being a cliche, where we go into nature and we find ourselves or we heal ourselves. And I think it's a cliche because it's true, but obviously cliches don't make for good writing. So it was fun to think of specific ways to show Kick interacting with nature on this communicative level, where he's going to see a sea turtle who looks a little bit like Bernie Sanders, because I think hawksbill sea turtles kind of look like that. And he's going to encounter jellyfish who communicate with we pronouns because they're a collective mind. And so it was part of my research to kind of, as fanciful and as surreal and as magical as this is, to make sure that these were all creatures that a person in the Gulf of Mexico could really encounter, because it is this rich environmental space full of all these animals.
Well, I wasn't going to identify what these creatures were, but since you have already identified some of them, I'm going to say that we earn it, because as we get further in, we encounter my favorites. You mentioned the jellyfish. I love them. And then you mentioned that later on, a creature that I'm afraid if the wrong people read your book, they're going to try to ban these seahorses because they are just so woke.
Yes. Yeah. I think, you know, that people might know, like seahorse heads listening, that seahorses are so special. They're just such beautiful creatures. They're so, to me, magical because they're fish, but they really do look like horses. And the male seahorses bear the young. And I think that's just such a reversal from the way every other animal reproduces itself, that it opened the door for me to think, like, what would be the mindset of a species where the men are the ones whose bodies do this work? And so I think, yeah, the Pringles, the seahorse, is pretty evolved in his perspective.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Kathleen Rooney. We're talking about her new novel, Man Overboard, one of the more unusual mysteries that I think you'll probably ever encounter. And the book is just coming out, and I'm guessing you've had some early readers who have checked it out. What kind of reactions are you getting?
The New York Times recommended it as one of their, you know, books to read for the summer, a beach read. And so I think that's been the reaction that I've been most interested in, because, you know, beach read is kind of a polarizing designation. And I have been kind of elevator pitching this to people as a beach read about a guy without any beach. And I think, you know, to me, beach read connotes a certain kind of escapism, but not necessarily frivolity. And I want this to be really absorbing, and I want it to be the kind of book, it's short, that you could read in a single sitting if you really locked in. And so, yeah, I think I've been pretty happy with what readers have been saying so far. And also, I think I've had some early readers more casually just say how unusual it is to have a book with a conventionally hot straight guy as the protagonist. So it was fun to slip into the mindset of this kind of physical therapist gym bro, because I'm not a gym bro.
You're saying hot straight guys are a rarity in fiction? I wasn't aware of this.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's what I hear amongst the literary readers.
Whoa. Okay. Well,
I know.
See, I don't know what planet I've been living on, but here, I'm learning a lot here, Kathleen.
And
The fact that you picked him to be your protagonist, I'm wondering about that. Did you consider maybe having this be a woman instead?
Never. I think one of my questions, I always have sort of a set of thematic questions that I'm interested in, aside from the plot question. Like, the plot question is crucial, and that's just, is he going to survive? And I think, you know, obviously no spoilers, but within that, I like the thematic questions. And one of my questions was sort of, what's up with men? Because we keep hearing all this stuff about the masculinity crisis and the loneliness crisis, which is certainly affecting everyone, but particularly manifesting in men, and sort of this, all these articles and all this talk about the disaffection and the alienation and the manosphere. And that was something that I didn't want to try to answer in like an opinion piece kind of pro or con way. I think it's much more complicated. And I think novels to me are a great place to kind of explore huge questions without the pressure of reducing it to a simple answer. And so, yeah, I always knew that it was going to have to be a guy in the sea.
Well, Kathleen, 20 years almost of smartphones, I think, has had quite an impact on our society.
Yes, and that's one of the things that Kick is kind of relieved that his iPhone is at the bottom of the ocean. He worries, he doesn't want it to hurt any sea creatures, but he kind of does, as bad as his situation is, come to be sort of relieved of the burden of his phone.
I love the image of that smartphone down there at the bottom of the ocean. I wish there were more of them down there.
Right.
Even though that's pollution. That's a terrible, I shouldn't say that. That's an awful thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
metaphorically.
The Gulf of Mexico has all that farm chemical coming down and creating that dead zone, all that stuff coming down from places like Iowa. And he's swimming in this stuff. And I was amazed he encountered so many sea creatures. He was fortunate that he wasn't in the dead zone, but at one point wasn't he thinking that that might be better because maybe then there wouldn't be sharks?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, that is one of the things he and the whale shark talk about is, you know, many of the creatures bring up the struggle that they are facing because of humans' bad stewardship of the planet.
I like how you fit that in. And then we really get a delicious reward at the end. You have a funny twist that is totally unexpected when we get to the end, and we're just going, oh, man, if you don't shed a few tears when this happens, you're just not, you're not feeling it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I work really, really hard on my endings. I think I feel like you and I may have talked about this before with regard to other titles, but I just think, I don't know, endings are so tough. And whenever I'm reading something or watching something and they really stick the landing, I have such awe and respect. And so I tried really, really hard to give this book an ending that would kind of, I don't know, satisfy people, but also surprise them and just feel like it couldn't have ended any other way.
I know you've had a very interesting journey through the world of publishing, and I'm wondering what it was like to try to pitch this book to a publisher.
Yes, it was a challenge because I think, you know, to the extent that people maybe know my fiction, they know it as historical fiction. It's always a bit of a challenge to do what is perceived by the industry as a departure. So I just feel very, very lucky that shout out to my editor, James, at Gallery Books, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster, for rolling the dice. And it's funny, but he said that as he was reading it, he was struck by how weirdly similar it was to Lillian Boxfish, which might sound a little crazy since that's about, you know, this octogenarian woman walking around New York City in the 80s. But I got what he meant. I think it's a similar story, although they're very different in their time and place, about a person who's kind of trying to reckon with everything that brought them to where they are, and what about their life, you know, has worked or still needs kind of to be resolved or seen differently. So yeah, Kick and Lillian, I think, are closer than even I might have thought.
Mm. Well, this is your fourth appearance on the program, and listeners can go into our archive and find interviews for those last two novels that you mentioned. Those are all your stuff's really different. He was comparing it to Lillian Boxfish, but he's doing this because he's so plugged in. I would not have gotten the connection.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's similarities and differences that I think people will pick up. It's even hard for me as the writer to see, but I think even like the talking sea creatures kind of goes with the half first person pigeon narration of Cher Ami. So I don't know. I just feel lucky to be in the middle. I hope the middle of a career where more and more patterns will emerge as I keep seeing what I do next.
Well, Cher Ami had been my favorite, but I have a new favorite, and it's Man Overboard.
Yay.
Because I think you really hit it out of the ballpark with this one.
Thank you. That means a lot. I mean, I really appreciate it. I know you're like such a thoughtful reader, and I don't know, I would agree. It's I don't know if it's my favorite, but I feel like I did what I set out to do, and I really hope people will enjoy it. I hope they'll laugh. I hope they'll cry. I hope they'll be entertained, but you know, afterwards, you know, I hope it works on this beach read fun level, but also on this like deep thinker kind of level.
As Kick is swimming along, treading the water, he has plenty of time to contemplate the course of his life. And there are many memories here, just little vignettes, little remembrances of this and that and these various places that he's been and all these people that he knows. And it's so fun to have all these little time capsules scattered around like glittering coins.
Yes, I really wanted it to feel like stream of consciousness, which I feel like is this term that people use a lot about books, but is actually relatively rare in its rendering in books. And so, yeah, he's literally in the stream, the, you know, Gulf Stream and the stream of his consciousness. And I kind of tried, I set myself this limit as I was writing it where I wanted the chapters to be short. And, you know, they're all, I think I stuck to this between 2,000 and 2,500 words. Mm. So it was a fun challenge for me just as the writer to know a lot of what these memories, you know, I needed him to think of Kelly, his sister. I needed him to think of Pam, his stepmom. I needed him to think of Justine, his older on-again, off-again girlfriend. And, you know, I tried to tie them to things he was encountering in the sea. So there was a logic to it, even as it was drifting. But there were times when, you know, I would be pushing that, like, word limit that I'd imposed on myself and be like, okay, like, you're going to have to save it. And so I'm really happy with how the drifting structure ended up.
Well, once we get to know Justine a little bit from his thoughts, she really takes on an outsized role as far as this is someone who really understands. And it's just such a shame that we have to get really old before we really can appreciate just how precious life is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I wanted to write about a protagonist in Kick who was not bad per se, but who had a lot of growth opportunity. And I think, you know, Justine being in her 40s is someone who has this perspective. You know, she has two kids. She's a divorcee. She's going back to college relatively later in life. And I think, you know, Kick, when we go into the book, loves her and appreciates her, but doesn't fully get the depth of her wisdom or her perspective. And I definitely wanted his thoughts about her to be one of the things that he kind of realizes he needs to maybe reconsider.
My guest has been Kathleen Rooney. Her new novel is Man Overboard. And I like the way that you give us various thoughts and ideas, but you don't bludgeon us. Everything is very subtle, and I appreciate your approach.
Thank you. Yeah, I want it to be, you know, interactive for the reader. I love fiction because it doesn't tell you what to think. It just gives you some occasions to think and feel and kind of do with it what you will.
Before I let you go, is there another project that you're looking at right now, or is it too early to ask?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm working on one right now. I wrote this book of, I don't know, poem essays in April. And so I'm revising those. It's called Calendar of Saints, and I took the saint whose day it was for every given day and kind of riffed on that. And so, yeah, they're funny. They're weird. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to them, but I think it's a book. And so I'm polishing that up, and I'm even like, I'm illustrating it, which I have no idea if anyone's going to want it. But I don't know. For me, I love writing so much. I always want an audience, but I'm in it for love of the game. And so I'm having fun right now, and hopefully eventually somebody else will have fun down the line.
Whoa. Does our Chicago Pope make a cameo in this new book?
Yes, he does. He appears. How could he not? Leo, right?
I don't know. I just got this image of him just now. Have you ever seen that photo of him as a young priest shaking hands with the Pope?
Yes, yeah.
I love that photo.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've been really following him closely. I mean, thumbs up so far.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Kathleen. Thank you so much for agreeing to be back on the show.
Yeah. Thank you, Vic, for everything you do. Thanks for being such a great reader and such a great supporter of books.
The book is Man Overboard, and you don't need a beach to read this one. This is for any locale. It's by Kathleen Rooney, and you heard about it in the Book Nook. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Stay tuned.